Good afternoon. This is the Design Commission, and I'd like to begin by introducing first the Bureau of Development Services staff who are here. Hello, Tim Herron, Dave Skilton, Chris Caruso. Welcome, everybody. The members of the commission here today are myself, Gwen Milius, the chair, Commissioners David Keltner, Ben Kaiser, Jane Hansen, and Tad Savinar. Commission members are private citizens appointed by the mayor to provide review of new construction or remodeling of projects within designated design zones. We are not paid but serve entirely as volunteers. More detailed information regarding the purpose and function of the commission can be found in the Portland Zoning Code. Commission members must declare a conflict of interest, bias, or ex parte contact prior to the staff presentation of a particular case. If a commission member has a conflict of interest or bias, they are not allowed to participate in commission discussion or voting on that project. If a commission member has had an ex parte contact, they must declare the substance of it on the record, and it is subject to rebuttal. Type 3. For Type 3 reviews, the following procedure is required. 1. Public testimony can only address the applicable approval criteria or other criteria in the comprehensive plan or land use regulations which the person believes apply to the decision. The applicable approval criteria are set forth in the Portland Zoning Code and are more specifically identified in the staff report. The staff will identify the applicable criteria as part of the staff report. 2. Prior to the close of this hearing, any participant may request an opportunity to present additional evidence or testimony. If such a request is made, the commission will either grant a continuance or hold the record open to provide an opportunity to submit additional evidence and an opportunity to respond to that new evidence. 3. Failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the commission and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue precludes appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. 4. Failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to give the commission an opportunity to respond to the issues precludes an action for damages in circuit court under Oregon Revised Statute 197.796. The commission's decision on this case is final unless appealed to the city council within 14 days of the decision. If the decision is not appealed, it must be recorded with a Multnomah County recorder. Specific instructions will be provided with the notice of the commission's action. This hearing is recorded, and all speakers need to sit at the front table and give their name and mailing address before speaking. The following procedures will be used for each case. 1. Staff will show slides of the site and surrounding area and present a report which will include the applicant's proposal, identify the applicable approval criteria, and include information on letters received on the request, findings, and a recommendation on the request. That's a 10-minute presentation. 2. Applicant will present their report. There's a 20-minute time limit on that. 3. Public testimony will be received in favor of the proposal, and I will be imposing a 3-minute time limit. 4. Public testimony will be received in opposition, another 3-minute time limit. 5. The applicant will then be given an opportunity to rebut the testimony of the opponents. 6. Public testimony will be closed. 7. If any party requests an opportunity to submit additional evidence, the record will be held open 7 days to allow time to submit additional evidence. The record will be held open an additional 7 days to allow parties to submit evidence responding to the new evidence. 8. After the record is closed to all other parties, the applicant will have an additional 7 days to submit final written arguments without additional evidence. 9. After the record is closed to all parties, commission members will discuss and vote on the request. In the case of a tie vote on any motion, that motion will fail. 10. If the commission's decision amends or overturns the Bureau of Development Services staff report, the adoption of new or revised findings will be required. At the time of its decision, the commission will announce when the revised findings will be considered. No additional testimony will be taken, but interested parties may attend. The first case on our docket today, actually, the first item that we have is the election of officers. So I wanted to discuss either electing today, we don't have the vice chair here today, or maybe having a bit of an open discussion about what we want to do going forward in the next year, and potentially have the vote on the 30th when everyone but Tad will be here, potentially. So wanted to put that out there for you guys.
Do we have a retreat coming up anytime soon? Wasn't there going to be a retreat?
Yeah, and that's another thing we need to discuss relative to dates and availability. We're kind of pinched with our calendar. Essentially, all our dates are booked almost through March at this point. And when I say booked, I mean 1:30 to 7 o'clock hearings. Mm-hmm. And so it's really a matter of just deciding how you want to split that. Either we set a separate day altogether, another Thursday or a different day of the week, or we do something earlier in the day. One discussion I had with Gwen and David, and I'm going to follow up with them again next week, is perhaps some mini retreats. We had talked about that last year. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I do think it's important we sit down and we do huddle on the year in review, but there was an interest by our commissioners maybe having a quarterly, like, two-hour lunch retreat, and we can do that as soon as all our schedules align. I was looking into February. All of you are available on those dates in February, except for Jeff Simpson. So I was trying to nail him down in his calendar, and he's waiting to get back to me. So a tentative date for a group mini retreat, 11 to 1, It would just be the commission and senior staff, so a little smaller, maybe as soon as February 20th. And I'll try and confirm that as soon as I hear back from Commissioner Simpson.
I mean, to me, it would be great if we could vote for the officers when we're all here.
I agree.
Right, and we're not all here today, but it's hard to get us all in the room.
I know.
At the same time.
Yeah.
So.
And I think at a minimum having a vice chair here.
I think that would be nice. Also, I would like to have an offline conversation with David about, you know, his willingness to continue in the leadership position and whether or not someone other than Ben Kaiser, who's also going to be coming off the commission right after me. I mean, you know, it'd be great if you could step in, or if you could step in, or somebody might need to step in as vice chair or flip with me or something. So we just need to decide how we're going to play that out, because I know that his, you know, he may or may not want to continue on with that, so. And I'd like him to have the option of talking about it instead of just nominating him and making him continue on with that while he's not here, which doesn't seem very nice to me, but anyway.
So as a suggestion, what we could do is table it till the mm-hmm. next hearing. I would suggest it be February 6th. The January 30th is kind of a special hearing. We'll have the Landmarks Commission in the room as well. And you may not want them voting on whether or not one of you should be chair or vice chair.
I serve at the pleasure of the people of the city of Portland. So,
if you're done with that item, I just want to raise one quick thing before we move to item number two with mm-hmm. Bureau of Planning and Sustainability.
Okay.
Two small things. One, I just want to remind you that the purple sheet, which is a kind of expanded version of what Gwen, Commissioner Gwen has just read relative to our process and procedures. And I just want to remind you that that's there for your reference as we go through the formalities of these longer type 3 hearings in terms of where we are in the order of things. And then the only other item, and I'm going to get this to you at some point during the hearing before you leave, it's a memo package, and this is representative of the material we'd like you to review before the January 30th hearing, whether you're there or not, if you wanted to provide comments. And this is regarding getting the Design Commission and the Landmarks Commission's advice and testimony on a new FCC proposal that's moving forward, a rulemaking, if you will, on a new wave, so to speak, of RF facilities and how they're mounted or how we should regulate them or if we should regulate them at all. So it's a very important discussion to have your attention on. Time is of the essence, which is why we fast-tracked that hearing. It's also why we put both the commissions in the room at the same time, and the hearing is going to precede the due date for comments by about 4 days. So we're hoping to have a very effective briefing. I don't think it would be more than an hour and a half, maybe two. It'll be presented by city staff, but we will have representatives from the community and stakeholders and the wireless community as well, having some testimony. So it should be very helpful and illuminating, and just want to make sure that you're aware of that. And so I'm giving you homework today, along with all the other homework you get from us.
Okay.
That's all.
Great.
Can we discuss the purple sheet for a second?
Sure. Let's discuss the purple sheet.
I have two questions. One is, on number 11, comments and deliberation, is there a clear, it seems like that gets fuzzy when we get to 12. Is there a way to? I need help. I'm the freshman. In determining where we are at that point in the process, deliberation versus comments.
I used to be pretty rigid about making everyone ask questions first and then limit comments to a comment period, and there was some blowback, and so we sort of let things go a little bit looser, but it still seems that this comments and deliberation, I think the trick at the end of 11 is that we make sure we get a pretty clear list of, and I think that's the please prompt that's popping out there. It's almost an 11B. It's when we're done deliberating, we need to kind of do a nose count and a list for the applicant to let them know really what the, you know, how many commissioners are going to have an issue with X, you know, is X an issue? Is it just one commissioner? Is it many? that kind of thing. We kind of have to do a little housekeeping and tidying up of comments
right.
at the end. Is that what you're asking, or?
Yeah, it just seems like that's the kind of awkward moment where we're summing up the project, but there's sometimes back and forth discussion, and
mm-hmm.
oftentimes there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it can't be regulated, but that's my hardest moment.
So you're saying a little more clarity between discussion and then comment?
Yeah, I mean, I you know me, I'm always saying, can we actually talk about this between us? You know, and that kind of puts a bubble around it.
Right.
So then it's back and forth instead of doing the comment march.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
So I think there are times when it's useful to mm-hmm. do the internal conversation because mm-hmm. that weeds a lot of stuff out.
It can be useful as long, I think, as we're able to, at the end of it, kind of referee what was said so that the applicant is able to parse. One commissioner said this, the other said that, and see if we can get to some sort of resolution.
Well, that's my intent, is clarity for the applicant.
Right.
I'm wondering if maybe by discussing it among ourselves in a bubble,
mm-hmm.
that we come out of that at the end with, okay,
clear comment.
We've all talked among ourselves, and we pretty much agree there's four things here.
Mm-hmm.
So I... I'll put a bubble around it if I personally would like.
Okay.
I could revise the purple sheet and use bubble.
Right.
And the other thing is, another point of confusion for me, are we using the same purple sheet for DARs?
No.
If you're asking me, I would say not exactly. I think it's a model, but generally the DARs are a little looser. A
but forum. When we have public testimony, I do have to
yep.
place it.
Yep,
and you
there's,
have to, yep.
So I'm,
absolutely.
So,
yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if there's a purple too.
I can do any color you want.
Or maybe you can just.
Well, I guess what's the issue with the DARs as opposed to the? Do you feel like there's that's even?
I feel like they wander around.
Yeah.
Again, my main focus is to ensure that we're doing the best job possible to be clear to our applicants when they leave. And the DARs seem to wander around.
I think that this process, as I'm reading it, applies pretty well to the DAR.
Okay.
The wandering is a little bit the a lot of DARs come in as pretty hairy dogs, you know, and there's a lot of kind of ideas being thrown out there, and I think the comments that you get from the commissioner sort of reflect the inputs in some ways, sometimes, not always, sometimes. So I think that the and again, I think in the past I've been a little bit more like, all right, let's draw some conclusions here in the DAR, and there was pushback to like let things be a little looser. But again, there has to be a cinching down of comments so that the applicant leaves the room with more
right.
clarity than maybe they have in the past. So it's, I don't know that we need a different process, but maybe we need to use this process more carefully within the DAR. I don't know what we would take away for the DAR because
yeah.
circumstances change.
I think the value of the DAR, though, is that you're having a conversation with the designer, and
right.
there is that back and forth, and it isn't so formal that
right.
you know they're presenting and with no interruptions, and we're coming. I think the fact that it's a little more informal is helpful on both sides because there's more information being kind of given back and forth.
Right, it's sort of more in the form of a crit as opposed to a right. So, but and I'm open to changing this for that purpose, but I'm not sure.
But
maybe I'll if I feel like it's nebulous, I will at the moment say I'm feeling like it's not.
I think that's fantastic.
And that way we don't need to change the program. Or the
right. program. Yeah. I think, you know, and I get in the same spot where I'm hearing, you know, three different opinions about one thing, and I want people to, you know, I want some way for the applicant to either count noses or.
Exactly.
What I'll happily do is I'll put this on a list for our retreat, even our mini retreat, and then with the list may get too big, we may decide that's something we want to discuss again then, and we could certainly do that and tease out some tools that help make us do our job better, whatever it takes.
That sounds great. Thanks.
Great.
I guess my point is that the ultimate process has to have boundaries and be formal,
mm-hmm.
and so anything that we can do to put boundaries around our discussion, I think, only ensures the clarity to the.
We're good at making tools. We'll craft another one.
Right. It's
no
the
problem.
Using of them that might be the problem. You can make all sorts of tools, but we have to actually use them.
I'll write a manual.
Then you have to read it. So, and use it.
Thank
okay,
you.
Great. Thank you very much. Item number two on our agenda is the RICAP 6 project. It's a briefing, staff presentation, and Morgan Tracy from BPS is here.
Thank you very much. So I'm Morgan Tracy with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, project manager for RICAP 6. And next to me is Julia Giesler, who is one of our co-authors, who will be here to help answer any questions that you may have. I appreciate you fitting us into your very busy and booked schedule. I understand you've got a full agenda today, so I'm going to try to keep this briefing pretty short. We're not seeking action from the commission at this point. We're sort of on our public briefing circuit. We're making the rounds to district coalitions and neighborhood groups and other commissions as well to get you informed about our project and give you a chance to ask us questions. If you have comments or further questions, you can coordinate those with the BDS staff, and we'll respond to those as part of our next round with our proposed draft. So before I talk about RICAP 6, I wanted to give a little background and context about our regulatory improvement program. As you all know, things change, and our codes need to react to those changes. To stay up to date and effectively address development and land uses in the city, this program continually updates the city's codes in a way that fosters desirable development. Code glitches are identified by staff and other agencies in the public, and they're entered into a centralized database. These items are reviewed and ranked by evaluating impacts and our ability to improve those regulations, the variety of stakeholders that the regulations affect, and the geographic range of the issue. Our database currently contains more than 800 broad-ranging requests, and addressing these requests can result in smaller topic-specific projects like the recent historic code improvement project, or can be more complex and involved multi-year projects like the citywide tree project. And then we have the various odds and ends that are not making major changes to policy, not making new policy, and these include technical fixes, clarifications, and some minor course corrections to existing adopted policy. And these are the sort of odds and ends that are addressed through RECAP projects. So RECAP stands for Regulatory Improvement Code Amendment Package, which is only one of the products of the Regulatory Improvement Program. And it's specifically limited in scope, as I said, to clarifications, corrections, and minor changes to policy. There are about 280 items out of those 800 that could potentially be addressed by RECAP. And RECAP is generally on an annual revolving cycle, sort of like when they paint the Golden Gate Bridge. They start at one end, and they get to the end, and they start over again at when they finish. To date, the city has tackled over 200 items in 5 previous RECAP projects. And that gets us to RECAP 6. So RECAP 6 began by staff selecting the top-ranking items from our database with an eye towards not tackling the items that are likely to be involved in upcoming comprehensive update code-related projects. So you've probably heard about the comprehensive plan update project. A number of those policy changes will result in future code amendment packages, more of the broad-ranging, multi-year, very complex and involved projects. We try to avoid areas of the code that are likely to be touched by those sorts of projects. The work plan for RECAP 6 was adopted by the Planning and Sustainability Commission at a public hearing in August. Staff then researched the 45 items and the problem descriptions more thoroughly, including identifying the original enabling legislation and legislative intent, and then worked with other Bureau staff to evaluate possible solutions and both non-regulatory and regulatory changes. After our initial research and code drafting, a set of initial recommendations emerged. So the 45 items fall into one of 3 categories, and that's sort of outlined in the handout you received earlier. We have minor policy changes, which respond to changing needs, new laws, court rulings, or new technology and innovations, and modify existing policy. Clarifications, to ensure that the code is being applied consistent with already existing adopted policy. And then the third set of items are those that did not result in code amendments. So there are several reasons why we may not be moving forward a particular code amendment for one of those RECAP items. The solution is we've identified a solution that's either not worth the cost or it adds too much complexity to an already fairly complex code, or that the existing regulation is achieving the desired result. Alternatively, we may have found the issue is important, but the solution should be decided as part of a more comprehensive project. It's just bigger than the scope of RECAP. Or third, there is more information and public input needed before we can make a solid recommendation. So the next steps in our process, the discussion draft, which is this document, has been released for public comment through February 21st. We're holding a public open house on the 11th of February to have a question and answer session. After we've received our comments, we'll incorporate those into a formal proposed draft for the Planning and Sustainability Commission hearing in April, and they'll make a recommendation which will formulate our recommended draft for the City Council for adoption in May. So with that, I wanted to cover a few items that may be of particular interest to the Commission. Some of these may seem pretty menial, some may have more relevance, or there may be other items on that list that I'm not covering here that you may have questions about. So I'd like to leave a little room for that. Under the minor policy items, the sort of key one for you guys is number 43, the public art for ground floor windows. So in commercial and EX zones, central employment zones, buildings are generally required to have 50% of the length of their ground floor wall in windows to improve the pedestrian experience along sidewalks and restrict fortress-like facades at the street level. Currently, applicants who receive approval from RAC, which is the Regional Arts and Culture Council, when they receive approval for public art, may apply for a second approval for a land use adjustment to place public art instead of meeting the ground floor window requirement. This proposed change would remove the second layer of the approval process by allowing RAC-approved public art without that land use adjustment. So this change only applies to areas outside of the central city where design review is always required, since the request to place public art in these locations can be considered as part of that design review proposal. So it doesn't add a secondary layer to the review process. And it is also consistent with an option that already exists for sites and design overlays outside the central city that opt to use the community design standards. The next one relates to the radio frequency transmission facilities, which is a very fancy term for basically cell tower sites. And as Tim noted, next Thursday you'll be hearing from BDS staff about the next wave of wireless facility deployment and upcoming potential changes to the Federal Communication Commission rules that may further restrict the city's ability to regulate broadband facility placement and design. The recap code changes in this discussion draft do not directly address the FCC's proposed rules, as that'd be a little premature since they haven't promulgated those rules. But we are monitoring that rulemaking progress and may end up revising the proposal depending on the outcome and timing of that rulemaking process. So the changes that are currently proposed as part of this recap are intended to remove or clarify regulations that could potentially conflict with a 1996 Federal Telecommunications Act. The Act preempts the city's ability to regulate the placement, modification, and construction of personal wireless facilities on the basis of radio frequency emissions, and we've got some standards in our code that regulate on that basis. Under the clarification items, there are three that may be of interest. The first is the community design standards cross-reference. So in certain cases, applicants have the option to use the non-discretionary design standards instead of going through a design review. Currently, the code allows applicants who are proposing residential-only projects in the RH, RX, and commercial and employment zones to use the standards that apply to multi-dwelling residential zones. However, some of those standards include regulations that only refer to the multi-dwelling zones. For example, the residential buffer requirement states, quote, where a site zoned RX, RH, or R1 abuts or is across the street from an RF or R2 zone, the following requirements are required. So there's no reference to sites using these standards that are located in the commercial and employment zones. So applicants proposing residential-only projects in a commercial zone that opt to use these multi-dwelling zone standards are sort of at a loss as to what regulations apply to their project. So this change will clarify that these more intensely zoned sites are also subject to this buffer requirement. So that kind of gives you a flavor of what RECAP is about. It's sort of very minor, discreet, targeted changes. Additionally, changes have been made to resolve minor inconsistencies in the language used throughout the code pertaining to allowed and restricted exterior finish materials. And this is just a matter of how the code gets updated over time. Different terminology or different sentence structure will get put in different places, and it creates confusion to staff and applicants as they're comparing those standards. Secondly, the plan districts and overlay zones where design review is required. As these zones and plan districts were adopted over time, the code authors employed various approaches to indicate when design review was required, including duplicating code requirements that are already spelled out in the design review chapter, referencing the plan district map, or simply relying on the D overlay on the zoning maps. These changes apply a consistent approach, remove duplicative language, and note that sites within the design overlay zone are subject to design review. So it just applies a more consistent referencing tool for all of those plan districts and overlay zones. And my favorite one is number 37. This is hard-hitting stuff. The Design Commission membership, this revision will correct the number of members to match your current membership and composition. And finally, under the tenet of things that we're not amending, there's the mechanical equipment screening. And this was an interesting one because it's a problem that we recognize with buildings that go through a pretty elaborate design review process. Building gets built. People want to start putting, well, there may be radon mitigation systems that are needed or air conditioning units or other types of mechanical equipment that gets mounted to the side of the building. This could have the impact of muddying up of otherwise very elegant-looking building facade. So the code currently requires screening for mechanical equipment located on the roof or the ground, but does not address equipment attached to a wall. So as staff began developing conceptual regulations, it became more evident that a one-size-fits-all approach was impractical. Restricting placement of these units from street-facing facades, for example, could prevent their installation entirely. And developing screening standards to address the variety of situations was not practical within the resources of this recap project. Since there's no current policy on how this type of equipment should be regulated, and since it can affect other regulatory and sustainability programs, this issue needs additional research to determine the extent of the issue and to vet the range of potential solutions. So basically, we came to the conclusion that this item was too big and needed more expertise at the table to come up with a solution that was going to work. So with that, I'll turn it over to you guys if you have particular questions about the 45 items on our list or if you have questions about our process.
Any questions? Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Well, it sounds like we'll be talking about at least the FCC stuff in some detail on the 30th, so you might be hearing back from us still. But
yeah, I'll be sitting in the audience for that
one. Okay,
yeah.
Sounds good. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming today.